people think a man is made out of mud. A poor man's made out of muscle and blood. And when he gets home, he wants to dial to a sound and a station that'll make him smile. 660 will make you forget how tired you are and how deep in debt. So when you tune KFAR, just relax and listen wherever you are.
Good morning, friends, and welcome to KFAR Radio's Meet a Pioneer. Today is October 25th, 1985. I'm Gail Malloy. Each Friday morning at 9 o'clock, we meet a pioneer. We're going to spend the next hour with Peggy Karstens, and she's best known for her experiences in mining. This morning's presentation is sponsored by Two Rivers Lodge, the Riverboat Discovery, the Forget-Me-Not Gift Shop, Larson's Jewelers, Mount McKinley Mutual Savings Bank, the Rose and Thistle, and Last Frontier Realty. And now, this is the Alaska Flag Song, arranged by Paul Rosenthal on the violin and Doris Stevenson on piano. Good morning to my guest, Peggy Karstens, who is in the studios of KFAR this morning. The look on your face, I just love it. You like that song?
I love it.
Oh,
it's really made for Alaska.
Isn't it the best?
We can appreciate whoever wrote that.
We're looking out the windows right now as we look out on 11th Avenue, and the sun hasn't quite come up yet. It's about 6-7 degrees, and it's all snowy on the ground. You've seen many a winter here.
I really have.
Peggy Karstens, you're being honored by the Alaska Women in Mining as the outstanding individual who's contributed significantly to the Mining Association, and you'll be bestowed with that honor, I believe, next weekend.
Yes.
Congratulations to you.
Yes, it will be 3:30 at the Captain Bartlett Inn.
Mm-hmm. And then Saturday night at a banquet.
And Saturday night at the banquet, and I wish all my friends would come and wish me luck.
Now, it's an interesting story about how you came up to Alaska and got involved in it, but you didn't grow up as a little girl thinking about being a gold miner by any means.
No, by no means.
Now,
no.
You were born, where was that?
In Missouri.
Can we tell your birthday?
August the 9th, 1904.
So you've just turned 81.
Yes.
And you didn't live long in Missouri, though. Of course, you moved...
3 years is all.
Uh-huh. And you actually grew up in the Northwest.
Yes, in around Spokane. And I went to school in Spokane and the Coeur d'Alene in Idaho.
Now, when we were visiting a couple of days ago at your home, which I really enjoyed, we got to talking on another subject. We got talking about Halley's Comet.
Yes. Yes.
You're going to see it twice.
Well, I'm going to try to. I don't think it will show very good in Alaska.
Uh-huh.
But if I have a way of getting somewhere where I can really see it, I would love that.
Tell me about how you happened to see it the first time.
I was in an orphanage, and I was about 5 years old, I believe. And the most I can remember about that is everyone was so frightened and praying and scared the world was coming to an end. And I think that is what impressed me more than anything, was the way the people were acting. And that kind of left it in my mind all these years.
Now, what was it that made everybody frightened of it?
Well, they thought the world was coming to an end, and it was something that they had never seen. And people, I think, were more superstitious those days about the phenomenons that happen in the heavens.
Uh-huh. Now, you grew up in Washington and had a family.
Yes.
And then you, well, what year was it that, how did it come about that you started thinking of Alaska? And how did the...
Well, I had some friends that kept telling me that about all these jobs up here, and some of them have already came up and then went back. And my family were grown by that time, and I felt like I needed a change to do something, so I just grabbed me a handful of airplanes, and here I am.
Now, you had five children.
Five.
They had grown.
Yes.
And you, at the age of 40-something, you came in 40...
I came in 47.
So you, about 40, 43 or so years old,
yes,
somewhere like that, you decided to, the kids were gone, and you were going to Alaska.
Yes, that's right. I'd heard so much about it.
And by yourself?
By myself.
You didn't know anybody?
No, I didn't know anybody.
Now, what work experiences had you had before then?
Mostly cooking, and I worked in dry cleaning. I like that better, really, than cooking.
I understand from reading an article, I think it was written by a longtime friend, Jane McConkie.
Yes.
Read that, and it said that you, at the age of 16, cooked for a logging camp or something.
Yeah, well, I was over 60. No, I didn't cook for a logging camp as much as I cooked for harvest fields when I was small.
Oh, I see. Oh, harvest fields.
Yes.
Huh, for a big crew of fellas?
Yes, yes, that's right.
Boy, so you learned how to cook early.
Yes. And those were the days that we didn't have the combines. We had to move the threshers from field to field, and your cook and your outfit went with them. It seemed like when I see wagon train, I think of the cook wagons that they have.
Gosh, huh?
Yes.
So your experiences, even from a little girl, were among the fields and farming a lot.
Oh, yes. I love farming. I like that very much.
Well, then in 1947, and it was March, you just, by yourself, not knowing anybody, came up here. Now, why'd you pick Fairbanks?
Well, that's where these people were from.
That had told the stories.
Had told these stories about so much work up here. And
what'd you bring with you? Just a bag, or?
Just one suitcase is all I had.
Really?
Yes.
Huh. And how did you get here?
I came here on the Golden North non-scheduled airplane. And these were the planes that didn't have any seats. They just had the seats around the plane. Like you see when you see these parachuters coming out, and they slide off of that bench, sit alongside of the plane.
Yes.
That's the seats we had. And somebody had brought sandwiches, and somebody had brought gum that we could chew to keep our ears cleared.
Gosh.
And the airline served us. They didn't serve us, but they gave us blankets to keep us warm, because there weren't any of us really dressed for 20 below.
I bet you weren't quite prepared for the weather, even though you'd heard it was cold.
Yes, I wasn't quite prepared for that kind of coldness.
Huh. Well, you arrived in Fairbanks on a cold March day in 47, and what'd you do? What was the first things you did?
Well, I don't remember whether it was a taxi or who it was that took us to the Pioneer Hotel, the old Pioneer Hotel that had burned down. And I sit there, I didn't know what to do, and I couldn't get a room there or anything, so I just sit there waiting for something to happen. And Trifina was clerk then. She has I think it's a service station down by the lake now,
mm-hmm.
and it's Triff's place. And she gave me my first job. And she asked me if I wanted a job, and I said, yes, but what doing? And she said, maid work. And I said, woman, I never did maid work in my life. But she said, I'll show you how to do it. But those were the days when all the tubs and everything, you couldn't have a clean white sheet because the water wouldn't allow it. And we didn't have the chemicals those days. Or people didn't have their own wells hardly. But it was hard work, but I enjoyed it.
Some of the cleaning and things you did as a maid, tell me about cleaning the tubs.
Oh, yes. Triff told me to use a little kerosene in the tubs. I don't know exactly what it was supposed to do, but I use it and it seemed to shine them up, something like that. I don't know.
Huh. We'll be back with Peggy Karstens on Meet a Pioneer. We're going to take a quick break to acknowledge some of our sponsors. Stay tuned.
20 years ago, Mount McKinley Bank was founded by a group of forward-looking individuals who saw a need in the community. The new bank offered low-interest loans to encourage new home building in the Fairbanks area. It was an immediate success. Today, Mount McKinley Mutual Savings Bank is still located at 530 4th Avenue in the same building where founder Julian Rice and First President Judge Vernon Forbes served on the first Board of Trustees. The bank has seen a lot of history, and their solid background of investment and involvement in the community has earned Mount McKinley their own place in Fairbanks history. Mount McKinley Mutual Savings Bank is proud to sponsor Meet a Pioneer. At Mount McKinley, they're looking forward to a future as proud as their past.
When Roy Larson started Larson's Jewelers on that day back in 1946, he had big dreams of what he'd like his business to become. Over the years, some of those dreams changed and others came true. Today, Larson's is still a family-owned business and one of the finest and most complete jewelry stores in the interior. Almost 40 years of skill and experience go into everything they do. Like Fairbanks, they've grown, but they're still your friend and neighbor. Larson's, fine jeweler since 1946 at 405 Noble.
Alaskans have always been famous for their hospitality. The same wonderful hospitality you still find at the Two Rivers Lodge, where Don and Stasha Troutman offer the best menu and interior, a comfortable, quiet atmosphere, and that famous Alaskan welcome to the people who are today's history makers. If you've been meaning to try one of the most talked-about dining experiences in the Alaskan interior, don't wait any longer. Go out tonight to the Two Rivers Lodge, 16 Mile Chena Hot Springs Road.
Welcome back to Meet a Pioneer. My guest is Peggy Karstens. And Peggy, during the break, you just handed me the neatest photograph, and let me read the back, and this will describe what it is. It's a small, black and white, of course, and it says, Orvella Finch, age 5. Now, isn't Orvella Finch you?
Yes.
That's your... Now, you never went by Orvella.
No.
But that's your given name. By the way, did you pick your own name, Peggy?
Yes, I did.
You just got to pick your name, and...
Yes.
Great. And you liked it all these years.
Yes, I have. yes.
And then Alfred Finch, age 3, and Buford Finch, age 7, the only picture of the three children saved from the fire, covered wagon fire, in Coeur d'Alene, 1913.
Yes.
A covered wagon fire. And your family lost all their things then?
Yeah, they lost everything.
Like the covered wagon, were you living in that?
Yes, we were living in that. We went from Coeur d'Alene's down to Oregon in this, in another covered wagon.
I'm just charmed. This is a gorgeous picture. The little boys are in their little short pants and leggings, and you've got a little dress with a drop waist on it, and leggings, and little black shoes, and two big bows on the side of your head with ringlets.
Yeah, my hair was naturally curly. So.
You look like Shirley Temple here. That's wonderful. I like that. Well, you arrived in Fairbanks. You didn't know anybody, so you sat in the lobby and waited for something to happen, and fortunately Triff happened, and you got your job. I mean, the first day.
Yes.
Where did you find a place to stay?
The Triff called around. There wasn't anything in the Pioneer Hotel, but she called around and got me a room at the Fairbanks Hotel.
Where was that?
I think that's down on 4th.
Okay. You got a room there.
I think
there.
It was. I don't remember.
Yeah. Then what'd you do?
Well, then I went out looking for a dry cleaning job.
Mm-hmm.
And Muncie had a dry cleaning shop on 2nd Avenue close to where Piggly Wiggly. There was a big Piggly Wiggly store there at that time. And so I got a night job working 4 hours there, and then I worked daytime as a maid.
You're saving lots of money, huh?
Well, there wasn't very much money going around. I had to borrow $20 from George Gilbertson. He was one that owned the Pioneer.
Tell me, how long did you work like this then at a couple jobs and living in the hotel? How long did...
Oh, well, it was just part of that summer. Then another woman by the name of Old Theo Wantman, she had a dry cleaning shop over in Grail.
Mm-hmm.
And she came over and wanted me to work for her, and I didn't have any place to live over there, so she had an apartment up over her place, so I stayed there, and we shared the food. And for my room, I kept the shop clean, and I showed her how to run the machinery. She had new machinery, and she didn't know how to run it. But I'd been in Seattle where we had all those things.
Tell me about your first 2 weeks, a month here. What did you think after you made the big step of coming up here with a suitcase? Did you like it?
Not the first 2 weeks. If at the end of that time, I would have went back if I'd have had the money. But I'm thank God I never left then, because I really learned to fall in with all the things that Fairbanks had to offer for me at that time.
You started making some friends. Now, you went to work at the university then. You weren't to work...
Well, I went to Bill Herring and Ray Reedy built a dry cleaning shop on College Road. And it's still the college cleaners. And that was in 1948. And I had quit this other job that I had and went to work for them. I showed them how to mark in their things and how to run a shop. And in the meantime, I had been out to the college and talked to Dr. Bunnell, and they wanted to set up a dry cleaning and laundry out there.
For the university?
Yeah, well, for anybody.
But at the university?
At the university, but I could take in, I could do anybody's work that I wanted.
Oh.
And Dr. Bunnell, he helped me get a house and my job. And
in fact, he helped you buy a house.
Helped me buy a house, and I paid him $100 a month until I had it paid off.
He did that just to help you out and kind of get you
settled? Yeah, well, I couldn't find a place to live. There was no houses. And it was it hadn't been quite finished. So I finished it up with laying, we had hardwood floors, so I laid the hardwood floors. All the material was there. All that had to do was to be put together.
And what building was this in?
Well, that building is since gone now. I don't know what's there now, but I think it's not too far on the opposite side of the road from the College Inn.
Mm-hmm. Now, while you were doing this, you took some courses at the university.
Yes, I took some short courses in mining.
Why did you happen to do that? Why mining?
Alice and Bill Herring were very... they liked to mine. In fact, Ray Reedy, they'd had a mine up on Deadwood. And
so you just
kind of enthused me for taking short courses. Well, something to do was what I was, to keep busy.
Mm-hmm.
Because I didn't have so many friends those days, because you were so busy working, making a living, that you didn't have time to do any socializing.
Who was your instructor or instructors?
Earl Beislein was my instructor.
Uh-huh.
1948 and 49.
So he's a pretty good teacher?
Oh, he's lovely. I still think he's one of the best.
Huh. Now, tell me about the Clem milk. You were telling me about Clem milk. This is just
yes,
a little
aside. Yes, when I went over to O'Teal's, we didn't have fresh milk then. It could have been in the stores, but I don't know about that. I don't remember. But that milk we used to get, powdered milk, Clem, it was so hard to dissolve that in water that it would be lumpy, and it didn't taste that awful good, but it was better than nothing for our cereal and things.
Boy. I was thinking about those mining courses again. What kind of things did you learn? Were they things that actually came, helped you out later when you actually really did start
well,
mining?
Well, not too much. I don't remember all that I did learn, but I know mostly it was about rocks and the earth and what gold bearing, or not exactly that, but it was, it told you what to look for when you were looking for gold and stuff like that.
Wouldn't be too bad subject to study up on, huh?
No, not in this country.
Now, what did you do after that?
Well, then I took the laundry and dry cleaning at the college, and I'd work out there in the daytime and work at the college cleaners in the evening, mm-hmm. 4 hours running the night shift.
Now, at some point, you ended up getting back into cooking and had your own place.
Yes.
When did that come into play?
That was in 64. I had done other work and traveled around, and before that, my mother had passed away. But I brought her up here for 1 year.
Mm-hmm.
She wouldn't stay longer. She didn't like it, so I had to take her back outside. But then when I wanted to get working again, I wanted to get a good job, so I put in an application for a cook on the Utana barge lines when Art Peterson was running it then. And I worked that year, and it was a lot of fun, but it was a lot of hard work, too.
Yes, I've cooked on the river boats myself, and you're the one person who doesn't get any time off.
Well, that's right. And when you go into port, you're so busy cooking,
uh-huh.
and you have to take care of all the supplies are furnished. And you have to guess how much you're going to eat on these trips up and down the Yukon.
Absolutely,
or
yeah.
the Tanana River.
In fact, port time was even busier because so many people from shore probably came aboard and had to be
yeah.
fed, too.
Yeah, there was a few like that.
Who'd you work with on the boats?
My first stewardess in 64 was Martha Johansson. She's Martha Anders now. And she just graduated from high school, and she was one of the stewardesses.
Jeez.
On the first boat that I worked on.
Gosh, huh.
And I still, she still, we're very friendly, and she's married Ed Anders, and she has children now. But
mm-hmm.
I don't see as much of her as I did when I worked in the library.
Now, was it after this, cooking on the boat, that you then opened your own little place?
Well, that's my plan. I wanted to have a little drive-in up at Central. And so I went up there and I had got talking to Heine Karstens, and he sold me a little cabin and moved it onto some ground that I had there. And
and that was what became Peggy's place or Peggy's grocery?
No, I had Peggy's place was down on the Tope Cutoff
at
Chistochina.
Yes.
By Chistochina there. I had a little drive-in restaurant there, and I used to, if I run out of supplies and didn't have time to go, I'd stop the bus and give them a note, and they'd get my supplies and bring them out the next day. They don't do that anymore.
Well, were you by yourself out there running this place of yours?
Yes.
And you cooked, you served meals, and you had the little grocery.
Yeah.
Well, did you ever have any out there by yourself? I mean, far from...
Well, a friend of mine had owned this big trailer.
Uh-huh.
And it was a great big trailer. And that's what I worked in.
Did you ever have any problems? Anything scary ever happen by yourself out there?
One time there was a couple of fellows that late in the evening had come in and eaten a meal. And I used to keep a gun over the door. And when they got through, they looked at this gun and they said, "Now who's to, what's to keep me from getting this gun and robbing you?" Well, I just reached under the counter and grabbed a little .38 and looked at him with it, and I said, "This will keep us from robbing me." So,
wow!
But I never saw those fellows anymore. So
I can imagine.
And it might not have been anything. It was just that I was trying to protect myself.
But you were thinking about three steps ahead of anybody else.
Yeah. Well, I tried to. But you have to do that at times.
Huh. Any lions and tigers and bears out there? Anything like that?
Well, that's why I had the gun there, was for bears.
Uh-huh.
Wherever you're cooking anything, it attracts bears. And there were lots of bears around those days.
Mm-hmm. My goodness. Well, you met Heine Karsten. You've mentioned him, of course.
Yes.
And tell us about that. Tell us about Heine.
Heine was a very wonderful person. But when I first met him and... I bought this cabin from him. I had no idea that I would ever marry him because he was married at that time.
Mm-hmm.
But his wife had died the following summer, I believe,
mm-hmm.
of 64. I think she mm-hmm. died in 64. So when I got off the boat in 65, I had hurt my back, so I went to the hospital there. Dr. Hagelin was my doctor. And so then I sent for Heine, and he visited me a few times. And then I had my supplies in my truck that I was taking to Central, because I had rented a cabin at Circle Hot Springs. That's when Johnny Burdall had it.
Mm-hmm. Circle Hot Springs, was that kind of the site of the courtship?
Yes, it was.
Uh-huh.
Yes.
Mm. Now, Heine, of course, has a legend and has a story himself. Came in 23.
Yes, he did. Uh-huh.
And that he had a lifelong, or nearly a lifelong, dream of coming here. And what else did he do? I mean, we know he mined. What other things did he do?
Well, he was a freighter, you know, freighting up to the, up and down the river and the roads to 66 Mile, I think, was one place he went. And he hauled 1,000 cord of wood in at that mine up by 66 Mile. I don't remember what that mine's name was now, but Morrison Knudsen had it. At one time, when I first came here, they had it.
Now, how did he earn the title of the strongest man in Alaska?
Well, he would take these 55-gallon drums and lift them bodily on a freighting sled.
And they were full?
And they were full, yes.
A 55-gallon drum, he lifted them himself?
Yes. Bill Stroker had witnessed it, so he knew.
My gosh.
Yeah.
And that's why now tell me about him working on the road, the Alaska Highway.
Well, when the war started, the government requisitioned the mining equipment. They were building that road, they were thinking about it, so he went on a barge up to Whitehorse from Circle. With all these cats and things that the government had requisitioned.
Mm-hmm.
And so he went up to Whitehorse with this load of machinery. And he took the first big cat into Whitehorse, a D8.
Mm.
And he knocked off off the first bush east of Whitehorse on the Alaskan Highway.
Oh. Uh-huh. Well, we're going to come back and hear about the wedding day and more about mining. My guest is Peggy Karstens on Meet a Pioneer. Stay tuned.
Sponsors of Meet a Pioneer enjoy the history and people of Fairbanks, like Dorothy Rice of the Rose and Thistle, a member of the community since 1956. The Rose and Thistle is many things, a florist shop with two experienced designers who do lovely fresh and silk arrangements, a wedding and formal shop with over 100 gowns in the shop, plus personal service and consultation. You'll find the Rose and Thistle at 330 Wendell Street, Monday through Saturday. Stay tuned for more Meet a Pioneer with Gail Malloy.
We'll be right back with Peggy Karstens on Meet a Pioneer.
The Pioneer is about Alaskan pioneers and the history of our last frontier. And Last Frontier Realty celebrates the past and its link to our future. You're invited to visit their office at the corner of Airport and Barnett, an original Fairbanks home completely restored, including archival photographs of the interior. On the Last Frontier Realty staff are some of the most effective salespeople in Fairbanks. They employ the most up-to-date marketing plans that work for you. And don't you enjoy their friendly messages on their sign outside? Please stop by and visit Last Frontier Realty, proud of our history and proud to sponsor Meet a Pioneer. Welcome back to Meet a Pioneer. My guest is Peggy Karstens. Well, you married in 1966, March 17th, which was kind of an anniversary of the month that you'd arrived in Alaska.
Oh, that was the month that I arrived, and Heine picked the 17th of March because that was the day that his mother would have been 100 years old, and that was the first day he landed in Alaskan waters, and he wanted that be memorial. And
really?
So it was, we were married on the 17th of March.
Oh, what an interesting story for picking that date. Huh. Mm-hmm. Well, what did you do then after you married?
Well, we moved into his house. I was living at the Springs, Circle Hot Springs.
Mm-hmm.
And so we moved into his house, and we spent part of the winter taking care of the Springs and the post office. And
you mean you and Heine ran the Springs then for a couple of years?
Well, for a couple of part of the winters.
Circle Hot
66 and 67.
Circle Hot Springs.
Circle Hot Springs.
Uh-huh. Yeah, huh. Did you enjoy that?
Oh, I enjoyed it very much, but it was an awful lot of work.
Because but you had to run everything, and you cooked, too.
Yes, I did the cooking, and just took care of everything, and Heine run the machinery, and was supposed to take care of the bar, but he didn't like that very well, so I had to do part of that, too. But I enjoyed it.
Now, you had some customers that had your meals one night that liked it so much.
Yes. Yeah, that was...
they left quite a tip. Tell me about
that. Yeah. Well, he enjoyed this meal so much. I could give you the name, but I don't want to because he's since passed away. And I give him a rare steak he wanted and sourdough bread and some sweets like maple bars and things like that.
Hmm.
And he gave me $100 tip. And Heine says, "What's the matter with these fellows?" He said, "I pick them up out of the airplane and you get the money." He said, "I have to go out in the cold in the field and pick them up and you get the money."
Yeah, I just remembered something. You, at your wedding, Heine did something really neat.
Oh, he sang me a lovely song. And it was When My Hair Is Turned to Silver. Now, I don't remember the song. I couldn't sing the song myself.
Mm-hmm.
But it is an old song. And after he got through and I looked up, well, most of the people were crying.
Yeah. I think that's
that
pretty
sweet. There.
Uh-huh. You know something, this is neat. Now, this is a quote from Heine. He said, "I was very fortunate to find someone like Peggy. She is a good wife, she likes people, is interested in my work, and is a good cook." And then he added, as he looked up at Peggy's smile and her eyes sparkled, he says, "And she likes me, too."
Yes, he was a very nice person. And he did love me very much, and I loved him, and I really miss him. But he wouldn't want me to grieve because he believed in people being happy.
Mm-hmm. That's an interesting story. And the Dean of Mines at the University of Alaska was amazed that Heine had been able to discover gold at Eagle Creek because he found it in the place that no one else looked or thought that they even should look.
Yes.
Uh-huh. So could he smell it or what?
No. We dug 5 holes before I found a pay streak. And that was done with a doghouse boiler.
Now, what's that?
A doghouse boiler is a little machinery set up, and it has a place to put in water and a place to put in wood. And you keep the steam up with that. You have to pump the water something up there. I don't know. You had to keep a gauge at a certain level.
Mm-hmm.
And Heine would be underground digging this dirt. And I would winch it up on a winch in a bucket. And we did that till we found it. And Danny Bergevin helped us with that.
Is that right?
Yes. Uh-huh. That was kind of hard to do, but we did it and we found the pay streak.
And you all, I mean, you and Heine really worked together. And it was
we were
pretty much all there was most of the time.
Yes.
Just the two of you, except when you had a son, I guess, visited. And
yeah, well, my son worked with us a couple of years there.
Mm-hmm. You wanted to say something about Dan? You'd spoken to him yesterday?
Yes, last night he called me from Seattle. And he, if any of his friends are listening, he wants you to know that he is well and getting along. He's a little lonely, but he's doing all right, and he wants everybody to know that he's doing fine.
Well, a lot of folks in mining are listening now, so...
Yes.
Now, after this claim had been staked, Lower Eagle Creek?
Yes.
And it was before the road was open. What all did you two do? I can't believe this.
Well, it was before the road was open, and we was afraid when the road opened that somebody would go in there and stake those claims. So he got on that RD6 and put a box on it. And I would sit on the box, and we drove over some of those snowdrifts were 30 feet deep. It was really there I was hanging on the ragged edge of nothing, waiting for us to go sliding down the hill, but we did fine. We just went over there and staked some claims. Of course, we found a spot where we could pen and get some gold before we could stake. You know, you're supposed to find gold before you stake a claim.
And you actually pan it. He was a pretty fast panner, I guess.
Yes,
I hear he
was
quick.
He was expert.
Huh. Did he have the gold fever?
He didn't have a gold fever so much as he was a prospector. The romance was gone when he found the pay streak.
Oh, really?
Yes. He's more of a fellow like that.
Yeah, I guess a lot are like that, huh? It's looking
yes,
for it.
I think
that's
so.
The magic.
It wasn't the gold that excited him. It was just finding it.
Uh-huh. Sounds like a Robert Surf,
yeah.
Service
yeah.
poem. Now you, what I was referring to that I couldn't believe too was that you moved your camp. You and Heidi
yes.
moved an entire camp over
yes.
Eagle Summit.
Over Eagle Summit.
Tell me about that.
He was past 70 and I was past 60 and we bought a camp below Miller House on Mammoth Creek. And we moved all those cabins and things over there.
What'd you move them on? How'd you lift them up?
Well, we jack them up, and he had some kind of a machinery from the old road commission, and we'd put them on that. He'd built something on there so that we could move the houses on that.
Now, I saw the pictures, and you moved all those buildings and cabins.
Oh, yes.
And the equipment.
Yes.
The two of you.
Yeah, wow. The only thing he didn't move was his drag line. We had to have somebody.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Now, what's the drag line?
The drag line is one that it will reach out and put the dirt wherever you want to. It's a big bucket that will scoop it up and put it wherever you want to. And we used to use that for our tailings mostly.
Was the Eagle site pretty... Eagle Creek site pretty productive?
We couldn't work it much because we were really, I should say, too old to really work good. But then when the first year after we opened it up, we had the flood. And so then it took us another year.
Oh, no, 67.
Yeah.
You mean everything was flooded?
Yes, everything was flooded. Every bridge and approach was flooded from Circle City to Fairbanks.
You mean you had just gotten set up?
Yeah.
And you had worked, I guess, that summer?
Yes.
And then the flood in August came?
Yeah.
And it ruined your equipment? And
yes. Yes, uh-huh.
And your cats? And
yeah, two cats and tipped over the drag line.
That must have been discouraging. What kind of an operation did you have? How did you mine this?
Well, what we did that first year was used a slicks plate, what they call a slick plate, and you took the gravel up to the slick plate with your cat, and then you had a bunch of water running down on that for the to run it through the sluice box to catch the gold.
Mm-hmm. Now, what did you do during this? Did you actually work out in there in that operation, or were you taking care of...
Well, I worked with him more because we didn't have so many to cook for that first year.
Mm-hmm.
But after that, then I did most of the cooking. I couldn't do much out because I had too much to do, and we would have panners every time. Every year we had panners.
And what's that?
Well, they just give me a dollar and go out and pan and take what they could find.
Folks would just drive out there and...
Yes, uh-huh.
But as long as they stayed away from your sluice box, I
bet. Yeah, as long as they stayed away from the sluice box. But, you know, gold those days was only $35 an ounce, and Heine never lived to see it get high.
Did he ever guess or say, oh, I bet it'll get up to...
No, he never...
Wonder what he would think.
Oh, he would really been amazed. He'd never thought that gold would ever go that high, and I don't think the rest of the miners realized that either.
How about the fun times? Did you ever have parties or dances or get-togethers or play games?
For me, it was fun time, and it was for Heine. It was fun time because we had so many people, friends that we knew. that would come out there, and,
and
pan, and then I would cook them. I'd made a lot of donuts and maple bars and things like that. And then give them a cup of coffee. That was their fringe benefit after they got through panning.
Those years, after when you met Heine and got involved in the gold, and the, how would you rate those years as compared to the rest of your life? Because you went through some different phases.
Yes, I went through a lot of hardships and everything. And the hardships I went through in the first years of mining was more fun time than it was hardships, because we thought so much of each other and we were so happy doing the things that we liked, and there were so many people come out every year. Now, Dr. McConkie has been a lifelong friend as far as long as he was up here. He was out at Isles, and him and Dr. Teal. And they used to come out quite a bit.
I thought this was kind of nice. You showed me 1977, the Alaska legislature. Be it resolved by the legislature of the state of Alaska, whereas Heine Karstens was an Alaska pioneer and a gold prospector in the state for over 50 years with successful mining operations in the Circle District and on Lower Eagle Creek. And during his times away from mining, he contributed to Alaska development, including cutting 16,000 railroad ties from tree stumps, bulldozing 27 miles of the Alaska Highway, loading 500-pound, 55-gallon barrels of fuel, which you mentioned, a feat which earned him the reputation as the strongest man in Alaska. Whereas in his 70s, he still carried 50-pound pack, walked 80 miles at age 72. His idea of a honeymoon was a 50-mile trip over snow-covered Eagle Summit on a D8 Caterpillar. And be it resolved that the Alaska State Legislature recognizes Heine Karstens, the stuff from which Alaskan folk heroes are made, honors his memory, and extends condolences to his wife and co-worker, Peggy. That's nice.
I felt so honored when they sent me this letter, that he would be so honored.
We're going to take our final break. On Meet a Pioneer, my guest is Peggy Karstens. We'll be right back.
Meet a Pioneer is sponsored in part by the Forget-Me-Not Gift Shop. Sam and Jane McConkie believe beautiful things are timeless, and everything you find at the Forget-Me-Not shop is beautiful. Fine linens, silver, crystal, decorator items for your home or office, and that little something for special friends. Forget-Me-Not adds a feeling of luxury to even the most practical items. So, for beautiful things for years to come, for your friends, your home, or for yourself, remember the Forget-Me-Not Gift Shop, open 10 to 6, 6 days a week in Northgate Square.
The Binkley family of Fairbanks take pride in the history of Alaska. They have a lot of history of their own. My golly, three generations of riverboat captains on interior riverways. As original sponsors of Meet a Pioneer, the Riverboat Discovery congratulates Gail Malloy and KFAR Radio on the first anniversary of this program. By the way, the Sternwheelers are up for the winter, but the Binkley family continues to enjoy, and the Binkley family continues to support Meet a Pioneer and look forward to seeing you next May aboard the Riverboat Discovery. Way to go, Gail Malloy.
Thank you, Steve Agbaba. We're very happy about having passed our first anniversary of programs on Meet a Pioneer. My guest this morning is Peggy Karstens. Heine passed away in 1977, and you're not an idle person. What did you do after that?
Well, I had to do something to keep myself busy, and then I thought I needed a little more income, but I didn't know what to do. I was on crutches, and I was 73 years old, and I saw a sign in the senior citizens' place where they needed somebody in the library, so I went down and applied. 73 years old, crutches. Can you imagine a crazy person doing that? And they were down on First Avenue at that time, so I went to work.
Oh,
then.
The little, the reddish, loggish building or whatever.
Yes, uh-huh. Yeah, that place down on First Avenue is where I first started to work. Then we moved up to the new one, and I worked there 7 years.
Good for you.
Uh-huh, and I just quit a year ago last April.
And I understand you were never late for work.
Never were late for work once. No, huh. I don't believe in that. So.
Well, you certainly weren't late for this interview.
No.
You were early. And well, how'd you like working at the library?
Oh, I loved it. It was a wonderful job for me. One thing, it helped me to get a hold of myself after missing Heine so much. It gave me a chance to be up and at 'em and not lay around. That's one thing I can't do. Now I go swimming about every day and do my physical therapy to keep myself going.
I understand, Peggy, that you have 4 boyfriends now.
Yes, I told Dr. Berger, he's my doctor, about my 4 boyfriends. He wondered why I was in such good health. And I told him, well, I got up with willpower and went jogging with arthritis, went home with Charlie Horse, and went to bed with Ben Gay. Now that's silly, huh?
Oh, Peggy, you fooled me on that one, I'll tell you. Oh, gosh. Huh. So you're traveling now, and you've traveled recently outside to visit some friends, and you got caught with Gloria.
Yes. Yeah, I was visiting in Massachusetts. I had no idea when I left here that I was going to be in a hurricane before I could get back home. But that's a kind of a dreadful sight to see all that high wind and those beautiful big trees being uprooted and smashing into houses and garages and things. It was just a mess, all those big, beautiful trees.
You know, another thing I always remembered, there's so many things, but when you were cooking, I don't know if it was Circle or Eagle or whatever, you had a beautiful wood cook stove that
yes.
You preferred to any of the modern stuff.
Oh, yes. I'd rather cook with wood and heat with wood than anything. But
There's a picture of you in a robe, and you got pancakes on the stove and everything else. It's
yeah.
Early in the morning, and you're
yes.
Cooking for the fellas. And I understand one of your favorite stove is somewhere.
The stove that I had and did all this cooking for these people and cooked many a pancakes for Dr. McConkie. And he has that in their gift shop, the forget-me-not gift shop. On Northgate Square, I believe, isn't
it? That's one of our sponsors.
Yes.
They have your cook. Well, what was he doing out there?
Well, they just come up to visit.
Oh, I see.
See, he was still in the service.
Uh-huh.
He was at Eielson at that time.
Hmm. And so they have their cook stove now, taking good care of it.
Yeah, oh, yes. Yeah, he polished it all up and is sitting out there where anybody can see the stove that I did so much cooking on. It's small, but it really worked.
Well, the gold mining years were certainly some outstanding years and favorite years in your life. You have been honored by the Alaska Women in Mining as their outstanding individual who's contributed significantly to the Mining Association. And you have been selected. I understand you're the oldest member of the Alaska Women in Mining. And you're a pioneer Alaskan. And this special event is going to be next Friday and Saturday. You'll be honored at a tea from 3:30 to 5, I believe. At the
That's the 1st of November. A tea will be there at Captain Bartlett Inn at 3:30
till 5.
To 5.
And what happens Saturday night?
That'll be the Chautauqua Banquet. That they will have an auction there, and anybody can donate something for their auction.
Well, I congratulate you. That's a great honor, and it's been an honor to have you on the program this morning.
Thank you.
When you came up in 47, you came up with a bag and just on a whim, didn't know anybody.
No.
You just had a kind of a crazy dream. You were wondering about your choice the first couple of weeks. Looking back, how did it all work out? What does it mean now?
It means this is one of the favorite points of all the years. Alaska is my home. Fairbanks especially will be my home as long as I live. And I will never live anywhere else here if I can help it.
You certainly took a brave step when you made that move, and I think everybody's glad that you made it, and it worked out well, and you've made quite a contribution.
Well, I thank you very much, Gail Malloy, for visiting my home and having an afternoon that I think we both enjoyed.
Oh, very much so. You treated me like royalty.
Well, I didn't give her the average soft drink or a cup of coffee. I gave her from hot cider with a cinnamon stick.
You sure did. Not only that, but with little fried chicken livers and ham filled with cream cheese, and we had special sandwiches, and we had chocolate eclairs. And I'll never forget, I had parked my car in front of Peggy Carson's home and was getting out in my pretty new coat, new mink coat, and I had on my high heels, and there's, 4 or 5 inches of snow on the ground. And I started to say, "Hello, Peggy, I'm Gail Malloy," and I started to wave, and she said, "Young lady, you get rid of those shoes and put on some snow boots." I'm wearing my snow boots today, Peggy.
You wear them today?
You bet I did.
Yeah.
I've been told. Thank you for being on the show, Peggy Carstens. Thank you.
Bye now.
Bye-bye.
Been listening to Meet a Pioneer. A taped version of this interview will become a part of the permanent oral history collection of the Alaskan Polar Regions Department at the University of Alaska Fairbanks. This program was produced by Gail Malloy.
From ABC News, I'm Kate Jordan. Looks like a lot of behind-the-scenes activity is about to bear fruit in the Walker family spy case. ABC's Kenneth Walker reports.
Accused spy John Walker has reached a plea agreement with the Justice Department, according to government sources. The plea bargain, which is scheduled to be announced on Monday, the day the trial had been set to start, apparently was initiated.